Manjakopatruvyasya Kripasindhu Vaivasya Patitanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So you gentlemen are joining us in the middle of the story, so it may be somewhat difficult to understand how the plot is developing. But anyway, bear with us. There was a king who had a very cruel son, and the cruel son's name was Vena. So this Vena was acting as the king, practically speaking, by his bad behavior while he was the prince. He drove his father to the forest, caused detachment within his heart, and the father left. And the great sages decided that this cruel king, Vena, he would be better than no king. Having him installed would be better than no king. Why? Because at least the thieves and the rogues wouldn't be plundering and disturbing the citizens. So they installed Vena as the king, but Vena did not act properly. He stopped the thieving and the roguishness from going on. But yet, he also stopped all the sacrifices that were being performed by the citizens for the pleasure of the Lord, pleasure of God. Because when a king rules, his rulership should not be just to satisfy his own whims, to put himself in the powerful position, to collect taxes and live a life of enjoyment or plunder. No, the purpose of the king's position and why he needs such power is to protect the citizens, to make sure that they have a materially sufficient life, and to stop them being harassed by the plunderers that naturally exist in every society. And while doing that, to make sure that they live in such a way that they make progress spiritually and take advantage of their human birth. So there's a material aspect as to the duty of the government to make sure the people are materially satisfied and living in a safe way. But also there's a spiritual aspect. To live in the material way has to be conjoint with spiritual advancement. It has to be harmonious with their spiritual advancement, not just material, trying to make people materially satisfied, because factually speaking, people cannot be materially satisfied any more than fire can be satisfied by putting more fuel upon it. It is actually the spiritual that gives satisfaction. Without the spiritual element of one's life, there's no question of being materially satisfied. So this king stopped all sacrifices, and the sages were very angry because they had placed him upon the throne, they had installed him, and he was defying the religious principles. So, disguising their anger, they instructed him very, very simply and gave him very good advice in a very respectful way, nothing extreme. They told him that if you will satisfy the Lord and make sure that the citizens are satisfying the Lord by performance of sacrifices, by performing their prescribed duties, everything will work so well. You will be happy, your fame, your opulence, your riches will increase. The demigods will be satisfied with you because the sacrifices that are performed with the fire and the pouring the ghee upon the fire, they are meant to please the demigods, the powerful personalities, because those powerful personalities, they govern the universal affairs on behalf of the Supreme Lord. That's why they're called demi, or like semi-gods. almost. They are powerful administrators of the universe. So the sacrifices are meant to please them, and through pleasing them, pleasing the Lord. So just perform the sacrifices, the demigods. So this is what the sages were telling the king. Just perform the duties of a king according to the Vedic system, and everything will go so well. Otherwise, if you whimsically act and stop the sacrifices, you will fall down from your opulent position. So the sages spoke very sweetly to him, gently, kindly. But his reply, as we'll start to hear today, was neither gentle nor kind, it was proud. So his reply begins, King Vena's reply begins in text 23. He said to the sages, "You are not at all experienced." The Sanskrit word is balisha. Balisha means like a balak, like a child. "You're acting childishly by suggesting to me that I worship the supreme, worship demigods. You are not at all experienced. It is much regrettable that you are maintaining something which is not religious and is accepting and are accepting it as religious. Indeed, I think you are giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship." So, why is he saying this? Prabhupada will explain in the purport. King Vena was so foolish that he accused the saintly sages of being inexperienced like small children. In other words, he was accusing them of not having perfect knowledge. In this way, he could reject their advice and make accusations against them, comparing them to a woman who does not care for her husband who maintains her, but goes to satisfy a paramour who does not maintain her. The purpose of this simile is apparent. It is the duty of the kshatriyas, or the king, to engage the Brahmins in different types of religious activities, and the king is supposed to be the maintainer of the Brahmins. So the sages were Brahmins, and the king was a Kshatriya, according to the Varnashrama system. So it is the duty of the king to maintain the sages and make sure they're performing sacrifices. So, in other words, it is the king who maintains the Brahmins. And now, the foolish Vena, is accusing the Brahmins. "Even though I am the one who's maintaining you, instead of trying to please me by performing sacrifices meant to please me, your maintainer, you are trying to please another, the demigods. You are like a woman who takes advantage of her husband's protection and maintenance, but runs off with another secretly. Inexperienced child, this is going to bring you ruin." So he's very, very, very proud. So in text 24, his mentality continues. "Those who out of gross ignorance do not worship the king, who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, experience happiness neither in this world nor in the world after death. You are so much devoted to the demigods," Vena said, "but who are they? Indeed, your affection for these demigods is exactly like the affection of an unchaste woman who neglects her married life and gives all attention to her paramour." So he explains the same thing again. Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, Vayu, the master of air, Yama, the superintendent of death, the sun god, the director of rainfall, Kuvera, the treasurer, the moon god, the predominating deity of the earth, Agni, the fire god, Varuna, the lord of water, and all others who are great and competent to bestow benedictions or to curse, all abide in the body of the king. For this reason, the king is known as the reservoir of all demigods, who are simply parts and parcels of the king's body. So he was saying he was arrogant by virtue of his power as the king, and he's saying that everything is going on by the mercy of your ruler. Basically, I am supreme. in this land, and therefore don't look elsewhere. Everything comes through me. So therefore, you should make sure that you're caring for me. He's saying, don't worship anyone else. Don't look towards another. So this is the great danger of power. What is that danger? That one takes oneself very, very seriously. More seriously than one is truly worth. So the king has so much power, and that's the great danger of that power, that he becomes proud and thinks that the purpose of his ruling is for himself. But any responsible position in this world is really a position of servant. So the king is not thinking himself like that in this case. Practically, he's thinking himself as God, the supreme, the center of everything. Here's Prabhupada's purport. There are many demons who think of themselves as the supreme and present themselves as the directors of the sun, moon, and other planets. This is all due to false pride. Similarly, King Vena developed the demonic mentality and presented himself as the supreme personality of Godhead. Such demons are numerous in the current age in which we live, the age of Kali, and all of them are condemned by great sages and saintly persons. So this is the tendency in this age of Kali Yuga. Everyone thinks that that everything should and does revolve around them. Literally, there are those who have demonic types of meditations who think that, yes, imagine their meditation is imagining or thinking, conceiving themselves as the ruler of the sun, the moon, the heavens, etc., the earth, is everything is moving by their power. So basically they're saying that they are God, and this is a typical philosophy. It sounds outlandish in one sense, but this is what people are subtly thinking, that I am the center of everything and that everything is based around me and my needs. And people at times are grossly thinking this, even thinking philosophically that I am the supreme, I am God, but somehow or another I have forgotten. And if I just remember my position as God, then everything will work out properly. There are so many philosophies like that, and it's so obvious if one just opens one's eyes the tiniest bit that we are not the supreme at all. And how could the supreme have forgotten that he's supreme? What has made him forget? Because when we forget, it means that something is beyond our power. There is that we're in the grips of another. I'm trying to remember something and I can't. That means that we are not perfect and that there's some force that is stopping us from remembering. There's something that's stopping us from remembering has that we cannot control. So therefore, what could it possibly be that can stop the Supreme, if he's the Supreme, from remembering that he's the Supreme? What could cause the forgetfulness of the Supreme? That would mean that there is something outside of his power and more powerful than him. So it's a ridiculous philosophy. Yet so many people nowadays are thinking like this philosophically, that I am the supreme and have forgotten. And if I just wake up to this fact, then all will be well and I'll be able to resume my position as controlling everything. So this is the age of Kali, or the age of confusion and quarrel. And such a mentality is always condemned, because we are not the supreme. Again, obviously, we are just little insignificant fellows, sparks of the supreme, qualitatively the same as the Lord, but quantitatively we are tiny, like sun rays, as opposed to the Lord being supreme, powerful like the sun. Sun rays as opposed to the sun. Qualitatively like the supreme, but quantitatively tiny and insignificant. So King Vena continued, text 28. For this reason, because everything is part of me, the supreme everything comes through me, for this reason, O Brahmanas, you should abandon your envy of me, and by your ritualistic activities, by your sacrifices, you should worship me and offer me all paraphernalia. If you're intelligent, you should know that there is no personality too superior to me who can accept the first oblations of all sacrifices. So he's saying that everything should ultimately be offered to him. Prabhupada's short and to the point purport. As stated by Krishna himself through Bhagavad Gita, there is no truth superior to him, to Krishna, to the Lord. Matab parataram na anyat. King Vena was imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was speaking out of false pride, presenting himself as the Supreme Lord. These are all characteristics of demonic persons. A person who is deeply in ignorance thinks that he is the Supreme. A person who is in knowledge thinks that he is the servant of the Supreme. A person who is pure, he acts fully as the servant of Krishna, of God, of the Supreme Lord. Thus the king, who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviation from the right path, became actually bereft of all good fortune. He could not accept the request of the great sages, who were basically just telling him to, you worship the Supreme Lord, it will be good for you, and you engage the citizens in that way, perform sacrifice, don't put yourself as the Supreme. So he couldn't accept that. And he cut his life short in this way. He could not accept the sages of the request of the great sages, which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The demons, people who have a demonic mentality, thinking of themselves as the central person in the universe, cannot have any faith in the words of authorities. In fact, they are always disrespectful to authorities. They manufacture their own religious principles and disobey great personalities like Vyas, Narada, and even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. As soon as one disobeys authority, he immediately becomes very sinful and loses his good fortune. The king was so puffed up and impudent that he dared disrespect the great saintly persons, and this brought him ruination. The foolish king, who thought himself very learned, thus insulted the great sages. And the sages, being broken-hearted by the king's words, became very angry at him. All the great saintly sages immediately cried, kill him! Kill him! He is the most dreadful, sinful person. If he lives, he will certainly turn the whole world into ashes. In no time. What turns something into ashes? Fire. Fire will turn everything into ashes. So this king had so much destructive capacity due to his mentality, not only due to his mentality, also because he was powerful. Because someone may have a horrible, selfish, completely selfish and improper attitude, but if he's insignificant, he can cause harm to an insignificant few and to himself. But when someone is powerful in a position, he can cause great ruination. So the sages felt responsible because they had put him in the position of king and he was causing trouble. They were giving him a chance. But because he was misusing that chance, they felt responsible to remove him from the position. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Saintly persons are generally very kind to all kinds of living entities. But they are not unhappy when a serpent or a scorpion is killed. It is not good for saintly persons to kill, but they are encouraged to kill demons who are exactly like serpents or scorpions, very envious in other words, and have poisonous abilities to cause harm to others. Therefore all the saintly sages decided to kill King Vena, who is so dreadful and dangerous to all human society. We can appreciate the extent to which the saintly sages actually control the king. If the king or government becomes demonic, it is the duty of saintly persons to upset the government and replace it with deserving persons who follow the orders and instructions of saintly persons. So saintly persons, their vision is fully upward to the Supreme. They do not aspire for anything within this world. They don't want to control the world. They don't want to control the kingdom. They don't have anything to gain from the material world. They're neither interested in riches, nor position, nor anything. But yet, they have compassion due to their spiritual vision. What is their spiritual vision? That everyone is eternal, that we're eternal souls, and then especially the human body is an opportunity for the eternal soul to make spiritual advancement. And so much of that, whether someone makes spiritual advancement or doesn't make spiritual advancement, so much is due to the environment in which we live. Because it's practically impossible not to be affected by the environment. If we are in a spiritual environment, we tend to become spiritual and adopt spiritual values. If we are in a materialistic environment, we tend to adopt materialistic values. If we associate, hang out with people who are drunkards, we'll become drunkards. If we associate with people who take other intoxicants, we will become like them. So we cannot separate ourselves from the environment in which we live. So when the sages, although they had no personal interest to interfere with the government, when they saw that the poor citizens were going to suffer so much by the materialistic leadership of the king, who is placing himself as opposed to God in the center, they felt very responsible and very dutiful to remove him from office again, because they had placed him in the office. So the saintly sages continued. They became very angry. This impious, impudent man does not deserve to sit on the throne at all. He is so shameless that he even dared to insult the Supreme Personality of God and Lord Vishnu. He said that I am the Supreme. Why are you worshipping anyone else? There's no need. I am the Supreme. Don't worship God, worship me. So they said, he does not deserve to sit on the throne. Prabhupada's purport. One should not at any time tolerate blasphemy and insults against Lord Vishnu, God, or his devotees. A devotee is generally very humble and meek, and he is reluctant to pick a quarrel with anyone. Nor does he envy anyone. However, a pure devotee immediately becomes fiery with anger when he sees that Lord Vishnu or his devotee is insulted. This is the duty of a devotee. Although a devotee maintains an attitude of meekness and gentleness, it is a great fault in his part if he remains silent when the Lord or his devotee is blasphemed. So the sages became very angry, properly so. But for King Vena, they continued, who is simply inauspicious. Inauspicious means nothing good can come from something that's inauspicious. But for King Vena, other than for him, who would blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose mercy one is awarded all kinds of fortune and opulence? So by God's grace, good comes to living entities. But if we ignore him, misfortune comes. Prabhupada's short purport makes this point strongly, predictively. When human society, individually or collectively, becomes godless and blasphemes the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is certainly destined for ruination. Such a civilization invites all kinds of bad fortune due to not appreciating the mercy of the Lord. So the great sages, thus manifesting their covered anger, immediately decided to kill the king. King Vena was already as good as dead due to his blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, without using any weapons, the sages killed King Vena simply by high-sounding words. It means they cursed him. Just with their curse, it was so powerful. Just by their cursing him, he died immediately. The sages have the power to bless and the power to curse. They were very powerful. And the king, the dearly departed king, was proud and he was a danger to the citizens. Therefore the sages killed him with their curse. After the sages returned to their respective hermitages, the mother of King Vena, Sunita, became very much aggrieved because of her son's death. She decided to preserve the dead body of her son by application of certain ingredients and by chanting mantras, mantra. So she embalmed him. Like, who do they do that to in Russia? Who? Yes, and they placed his body in the Kremlin, the square. Did you go and see? Did you go and see? When I went there, I wanted to go and see, but it was closed at that time. His body had been there. What year did he die? In the 20s or 30s or something? 54.
54?
No.
He was 54.
He was 54. But not in 1954. He died much earlier.
1924.
24. So his body is still, after so many years, still sitting there, and you can see it is not all crumbled and wrinkled and decomposed by putting some medicine and whatsoever upon it. And so it's possible to embalm bodies. So the queen knew how to do this, or not the queen, the queen mother knew how to do this. So she applied certain ingredients and chanted mantras, so she embalmed. Now they want to bury him. There's a move to take Lenin out of embalmment and put him in the earth and let his body decompose. But anyway, she embalmed, the queen embalmed the dead king, Vena, who had been killed by mantras. So then, the story continues. Once upon a time, the same saintly persons, after taking their bath in the river Saraswati, they had bathed in the holy river, they began to perform their daily duties by offering oblations into the sacrificial fire. After this, sitting on the bank of the river, they began to talk about the transcendental person and his pastime. So they immediately, after doing what they considered their duty in removing the king, well, they tried to help him, they spoke to him sweetly, they tried to give him good advice, but when he remained obstinately bad, they killed him. And then they went back and resumed their duties of being sages, which basically was to keep pure and preach purity and make sure that and provide the proper leadership for people. Spiritual leadership. So amongst themselves, they were talking about the Lord, Satkata. They were talking about eternal truths. Most people, when they talk, it's talking just about the temporary material world, and this happened and that happened, and did you hear about this and did you hear about that, and how can I get this and how's that one. But they were talking about the eternal. So in those days, after the king had been killed, this is text 37, there were various disturbances in the country that were creating a panic in society. Therefore, all the sages began to talk amongst themselves. Since the king is dead, they said, there is no protector in the world. Misfortune may befall the people in general on account of rogues and thieves. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Whenever there is a disturbance in the state or a panic situation, the property and the lives of the citizens become unsafe. This is caused by the uprising of various thieves and rogues. And you see this when law and order breaks down, there's rioting, there's looting, all over the world this happens. So much trouble. Burning, killing, raping, looting, because the government's business is to make sure there is law and order. So at such a time, when the government isn't strong, it is to be understood that the ruler or the government is dead. All of these misfortunes happened due to the death of King Vena. Thus the saintly persons became very anxious for the safety of the people in general. The conclusion is that even though saintly persons have no business in political affairs, they are always compassionate upon the people in general. Thus, even though they are always aloof from society, out of mercy and compassion, they consider how the citizens can peacefully execute their rituals and follow the rules and regulations of Varnashrama Dharma. This was the concern of these sages. In this age of Kali, everything is disturbed. Therefore, saintly persons should take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended in the Shastras. Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Eva Kebalam, Kaloa Nasteva, Nasteva Gatyanyata. Both for spiritual and material prosperity, everyone should devotedly chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Because things are very disturbed. Kalo Doshanidhe Rajan. In this age of Kali, there is so much trouble, there is so much disturbance, there is so much thievery and roguery, so much difficulty, so much bad environment that naturally the citizens fall prey to. Between the media, between the government with the taxes, between this exploitation and that exploitation, so much people's minds are so disturbed and upset, so unpeaceful. So therefore, everyone, Prabhupada explains, should take to the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. And by the chanting of Hare Krishna, the saintly person should do that and help others also chant Hare Krishna, because it will be so helpful materially and spiritually to everyone. So when the great sages were carrying on their discussion in this way, they saw a dust storm rising from all directions. This storm was caused by the running of thieves and rogues who were engaged in plundering the citizens. In other words, there was so much a proliferation of thieves and rogues that it was causing a dust storm by their running. So a strong, Prabhupada explains in his purport, that a strong government is always required to keep the thieves and rogues in place. Upon seeing the dust storm, the saintly persons could understand that there were a great deal of irregularities due to the death of King Vena. Without government, the state was devoid of law and order. And this is why they placed him in the position in the first place. Because they saw that when Anga went to the forest, the king went to the forest, the strong and good king went to the forest, the rogues and thieves were causing so much trouble to the citizens. So they considered that if, even though this King Vena is not qualified, but at least he's powerful, and therefore he'll protect the citizens from thievery and crime. So even though he's not qualified, they'll do that. But when he started causing more trouble in one sense than the thieves and the criminals, then they got rid of him. But then the thieves and the criminals, due to lack of strong government, came back. So without government, the state was devoid of law and order. And consequently, there was a great uprising of murderous thieves and rogues who were plundering the riches of the people in general. Although the great sages could subdue the disturbance by their power, just as they could kill the king, they considered it improper on their part to do so. Thus, they did not attempt to stop the disturbance. So rather than doing it themselves, it wasn't quite their duty to do that, but rather they thought what is really needed is that a king has to be placed in charge. So where is the king going to come from? Because to be king and to rule properly, one needs power, but one also needs goodness too. Wisdom and a particular nature, but one needs power. So an ordinary person can't be made king just by some votes or rule properly. One needs power too. So the great sages began to think that although a Brahmin is peaceful and impartial because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect the poor human society. By such neglect, a Brahmin's spiritual power diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out. So they said, if we don't do something again, we place the king in, we had to take him out, but if we neglect the citizens at this point, we will lose our power, because if someone needs help and you don't help him, it is very bad. One loses his position. So the analogy is as a water kept in a cracked pot leaks out, the Brahmins thought we will lose our position, our power. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Brahmanas, the topmost section of human society, are mostly devotees. They are generally unaware of what's happening within the material world. Why? Because they're always busy in their activities for spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, when there is a calamity in human society, they cannot remain impartial. If they do not do something to relieve the distressed condition of human society, it is said that due to such neglect, their spiritual knowledge diminishes. Almost all the sages go to the Himalayas, high in the mountains, for their personal benefit. But Prahlad Maharaj said that he did not want liberation, he did not want peace alone for himself. He decided to wait until he was able to deliver all the fallen souls of the world. So the sages, being pure-hearted devotees, felt compassionate for the citizens and decided it was up to them to do something. The sages decided that the descendants of the family of saintly King Anga should not be stopped, because the lineage had stopped with this vena. For in this family, the semen was very powerful, and the children were prone to become devotees of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport. The purity of hereditary succession is called amoghavirya, which means basically sinless and powerful. So the children tend to take on the characteristics of the parents. Not only, but they tend in that direction. So since Maharaj Anga, coming in the line, the family line of Dhruva Maharaj, was so powerful, they did not want that line to stop. So the pious seminal succession of the twice born families of the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, especially, as well in the family of Vaishyas, the mercantiles, the intellectuals, and the warriors, they must be kept very pure by the observation of the purificatory processes beginning with Garbhadhan Sanskar. So if one marries properly and one's consciousness is proper during the marriage, at the time of conception, the children can be very special. So the process of bringing forth special, powerful children into this world is called Garbhadhan Sanskar. Unless the purificatory process is strictly observed, especially by the Brahmins or the pure priestly intellectuals, the family descendants become impure, and gradually sinful activities become visible in the family. And you see this especially in India, where in the West you don't see this. People marry only because of what? Love in the West. And when the love ceases to be, then they fall out of marriage and marry somebody else. And in India today, when someone marries someone who they like, they even call it a love marriage. They call it that. But you see also in India, that there are very, very pious families, and they'll marry the children, the descendants of that family, they'll only marry of a similar type of family. Of course, not in the same family, but in a similar type of family. So very pious people will marry various pious people. And in that way, the children that are born of such a pious union tend to be very pious too. They tend in that way. And you see this in India, that when you see very pious and high-class families, they have such wonderful characteristics. Not that it doesn't happen in the West also, but it's a principle in India. So, and the people, when we mean that they're pious, it means they're very clean mind and hearts, and they don't tend towards sinful activities. They don't tend in that direction. So, unless the purificatory process is strictly observed, especially by the brahmanas, the family descendants become impure, and gradually sinful activities become visible in the family. Maharaj Anga was very pure because of the purification of semen in the family of Maharaj Dhruva, and he was in that line. However, his semen became contaminated in association with his wife Sunita, who happened to be the daughter of death personified. Because of this polluted semen, King Vena was produced, so a bad son in a good family. This was a catastrophe in the family of Dhruva Maharaj. All the saintly persons and sages considered this point, and they decided to take action in this matter as described in the following verse. After making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force. And according to a specific method, so they began, they knew a particular science. They not only knew how to curse and bless, but they knew many mystical sciences as well. So they began, they were considering that the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj coming through Anga and even through Vena were powerful. So how to get another powerful child from Vena? He's dead, but the body had been preserved. So they churned his body in a particular way. And as a result, according to a specific method, as a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. Purport explains. So though dead, the body of King Vena was preserved by drugs and mantras chanted by King Vena's mother. In this way, the ingredients for the production of another body were there. When the body of the person named Bahuka came out of the dead body of King Vena, it was really not very astonishing. It was simply a question of knowing how to do it. From the semen of one body, another body is produced, and the life symptoms are visible due to the soul's taking shelter of this body. One should not think that it was impossible for another body to come out of the dead body of Maharaj Vena. This was performed by the skillful action of the sages. So the person born of King Vena's thighs was named Bahuka, and his complexion was as black as a crow's. All the limbs of his body were very short, his arms and legs were short, and his jaws were large. His nose was flat, and his eyes were reddish, and his hair was the color of copper. He was very submissive and meek, and immediately after his birth, he bowed down and inquired, "Sirs, what shall I do?" The great sages replied, "Please sit down." Nishida, that means sit down. Thus, Nishada, the father of the Nishada race, was born. Nishada race, Prabhupada will explain in the final purport a little about that race. After hit of the next verse, so this is the final verse in the chapter that we'll read now, and we'll read the purport. After his birth, the dwarf-like Nishada, he immediately took charge of all the resultant action of King Vena's sinful activities. So all the sin that made Vena so impious and cruel and miserable and atheistical and demonic and roguish and proud, all that sin came out of him in the body of this nishada, nisheda. So, as such, this nishada class are always engaged in sinful activities like stealing, plundering, and hunting. Consequently, they were only allowed to live in the hills and the forest. So he, basically, the one who was carrying all the sins from Vena, they sent him away to the forest. Purport. The nishadhas are not allowed to live in cities and towns because they are sinful by nature. As such, their bodies are very ugly and their occupations are also sinful. We should, however, know that even these sinful men, who are sometimes called karatas, even these sinful men can be delivered from their sinful condition and be elevated to the topmost Vaishnava platform by the mercy of a pure devotee. So that is, their sinful bodies are just their bodies, but they are souls. So they, regardless of what type of body one can have, or one has, one can be elevated to the topmost position by mercy of a devotee. Engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord can take anyone, can make anyone, however sinful he may be, fit to return home back to Godhead. One has only to become free from all contamination by the process of devotional service. In this way, everyone can become fit to return home back to Godhead. This is confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. Mamhi partive pashritya, yepi siu papayonaya, striyo vaishas tata sujas tepi yanti paramgatim. O son of Prita, those who take shelter of me, Krishna says, though they be of lower birth, women vaishas, merchants, as well as sudras, workers, can approach the supreme destination. So this is how the pastime is progressing. So now Vena has been killed. This nishada has been produced from his body by the sages. And we will see tomorrow what happens next. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Pretty far out, huh? Okay, so tomorrow we'll hear some more of this amazing pastime. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.